Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who, in the year 2000, also directed a season 3 episode of the show, The Journey of Alan Strange, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Was that your first non-Trek episode that you directed?
It was the first thing. So I had, you know, been shadowing a lot when we started Voyager.
Yes.
I shadowed on the show and directed late season 2, you know, Sacred Ground, my first episode.
Yes.
And then I think it was a couple of years later, I hadn't directed any, you know, I'd made some short films.
The Battery and 9mm.
The Battery
of Love.
And 9mm of Love. Mm-hmm. I think at this point I just made the Battery, but I wanted to direct. You know, I was getting to the place where I'm like, I should be, you know, looking for something in our hiatus that I could direct outside of Star Trek.
Yes.
And my kids were all young at the time, and I was watching a lot of Nickelodeon. Was the big one back then, and then Disney Channel was another one. But Nickelodeon had cool stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
Cool shows.
Which you were familiar with because of your three young children that you had. Yes.
And there was this one show they loved called The Journey of Alan Strange. Mm. And it was about, it was basically like My Favorite Martian. It was some kids that meet an alien who looks like, you know, he looks like a
human.
It's a lot like Resident Alien now that I do. But he looks like a kid. And so they have to hide him out in their attic. And it's all the adventures of like, how do they keep him a secret? And he's got special powers and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I was like, perfect. A kid show, half hour. And the track record of this show and the producer of this show, Tommy Lynch, was really interesting. He had had a show called The Secret World of Alex Mack before that. That was very a cult hit with kids and not just kids. And anyway, so I reached out to them and I said, hey, here's my short film, The Battery. Here's my Star Trek stuff. Whatever it takes, I want to direct. And I just pushed, had a little help from my agent. And that's how it happened.
So you had no connections in that office. You just reached out to them.
I told my agent, and then my agent reached out to them and set up the first meeting. And then I just stayed on top of it after that. And The line producer, his name is Chip Vuislich, ended up producing 9mm of Love for me.
Oh, wow.
Like a year or so after I did The Journey of Alan Strange.
I love it.
And a lot of directors went through that particular showrunner, Tommy Lynch. Mm-hmm. His shows like Secret World of Alex Mack and Journey of Alan Strange and The Jersey was another one he made about a magic jersey. And people like Sean Levy, who now produces Stranger Things and directed Night at the Museum and all kinds of stuff.
Sean
was one of my fellow directors on the kid show. Allison Liddy Brown, who directed us once, but has gone on to lots of great stuff.
Quite a few notable directors cut
notable
their teeth
people.
On Journey of Alan Strange and with that showrunner.
Those kid shows,
yeah. That's you know, that makes sense. But I do have a question. I never asked you this, but when you first directed Sacred Ground, did you then go out and say, before you directed, did you then say, I need to find an agent for directing jobs? Like, did you, because like as actors, we have a theatrical agent that handles our theatrical auditions as well as our commercial auditions, or maybe we split it up. We have one theatrical agent and one commercial agent. So explain to me that process of how did you acquire your agent for directing?
Well, I was at a small agency called Susan Smith and Associates that really classy list of actors, but they had no directors. They had no, they may have had some writers there.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, I met the writer, Rob Chernow, who wrote the film, The Battery. He'd written a feature a full-length film called The Battery that he wrote on spec.
Okay.
And I asked my agent, Susan Smith. She said, oh, this guy, Rob Chernow, is trying to be a writer. Maybe you can meet him. And so that's how The Battery, my first short film, came about.
Right.
I took his feature-length script and I said, hey, let's come up with a short version of this, like an intro, like an origin story of these brothers that are baseball players in his movie, adult baseball players together. But I said, what's their origin story? How did they start? And so we made their childhood story of like how they sort of bonded. Yeah, I needed an agent. And I think I had left Susan's office around season three or four to move to a bigger off, found a manager and a bigger agent. And that's how I found the beginnings of my directing.
Where'd you move to? From Susan Smith to where?
I went to a management company. I can't even remember the name of it. didn't work out well.
Okay.
Ultimately, and the agency was my acting agent. Then was I bounced around to a few different agencies.
Okay.
Can't but remember.
You're not remembering the names of them.
I don't even remember my agents.
You know, I should know you better and not go down that alley.
I just can't remember where I went. I was at Susan Smith's office for a long time.
Which, again, a very, very well-established and respected boutique agency is what you would call that. A smaller agency with a client list that is arguably a good, solid list. And people look at it, these are good actors. Like,
They had a really strong list. And that was what I loved about it. And then I don't know. I think because of the directing thing, I was trying to look for a different agency. And show business.
What agency are you at now?
I am at a little agency called CAA.
Okay, so you're at CAA as a director and as an actor too. Do they still? No, not really.
Just you a director and producer.
Just directing only.
I don't have an acting agent. I mean, I guess CAA would represent me if an acting thing comes along and And your good friend, Mitch Melkinson, my attorney, he's handled any of like the Lower Decks thing when that came in, that went through Mitch. No agent on it.
Mitch handled that. Okay.
Yeah.
I got a
business show business. It's boring business.
You know what? I don't know why I haven't done this, but I need to have lunch with Mitch.
Yes, you should.
Son of a gun. First of all, I have to have lunch just to give him crap for giving you all the photos of me.
Photo of your broken tooth.
My broken tooth on the ski trip. All these things that were part of my past reemerged because of Mitch Melkinson, our connection that we have. And it's funny because if I was going to say of all the guys that I was in the fraternity with, like which ones would be the successful
guy?
Mitch was the guy that played around all the time. I thought that Mitch was going to end up being a used car salesman, to be honest. I was like, that's what Mitch will do. He'll sell cars.
That's a Hollywood attorney is kind of a used car salesman.
In a way.
The same
thing. But he was such a... He was, you know, he had fun. It just seemed like he didn't take anything seriously. So I thought, you know, Mitchell, he'll have some retail job. I don't know. He'll own a Subway franchise or something like
that. He's a named partner at one of the... biggest entertainment law firms in Hollywood.
He's a heavy hitter.
So
I'm proud of him. Definitely. I knew him from his very, very humble beginnings before that.
The thing I love most about Mitch Melkinson, my attorney now, is he has an old 1955 Corvette, 58 Corvette.
An old vintage Corvette. Oh, I love it.
Vintage, like one of the first models.
Yeah.
It is cherry. It is a beautiful little...
It's gorgeous, huh?
Yeah.
Did he take you for a ride in the vehicle?
No, I've just seen him, when I've had lunch with him, if he's pulled up in that thing, I'm like, wow, that is a cool car.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about this episode. This is the sequel to the Unimatrix Zero Part One. This is Unimatrix Zero Part Two.
Yes.
This is the second part of it. The season opener for season seven, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go watch this episode and we'll be right back, everybody, with our recap and discussion of Unimatrix Zero Part Two. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey everyone, we're back from watching Unimatrix Zero Part Two. Part Two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of action.
Wow. Lot of action. I will say I enjoyed this better than the first one.
Oh,
Are we opposite?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. That's
really
funny.
You're.
I did.
Oh,
I enjoyed this better. I mean, the first one was good. It was fine. I felt like it was a lot of like, I don't know. I feel like things paid off and you know,
that's fine.
Let's go through it.
Let's agree to disagree. We can disagree.
Okay. All right.
Here is my poetry synopsis, my haiku synopsis for Unimatrix Zero Part 2. Away team, still Borg. Trojan horse was the mission. Sanctuary gone.
Nice. Yeah, nice. Okay. Here we go with a limerick poetry synopsis of this entire extravaganza.
Lay it on me, Robbie.
Here we go. It's a limerick, by the way. The captain plays an undercover game while Seven deals with an old flame. No time for romance. Janeway takes charge of the circumstance, and the Borg may just never be the same.
Oh, that's tight and good. That was a very good example for that was good.
I'll give you an A. Thank you.
All right. 9.6. How's that? Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Our teleplay and story kind of
remains the same. Yeah.
Remains the same. Mike Vahar directed.
It was Vahar. Yes. All right.
I love Mike Vahar. He was awesome. So
he was. He is. Yeah. Excuse me.
And by the way, I'm going to say did a great job in this episode. I thought Vahar's directing.
Yeah. Good.
His directing. Yeah. And when we get there, there's a couple of great shots in particular that I was like, whoa.
I think I know what you're going to say. Go ahead. Keep going.
Our cast is all the same.
Yep.
Except we have two new additions. We have Andrew Palmer playing the errant drone. Remember when she talks to the drone? She's like, I can't hear you. And he's in the room with her.
One. Yeah.
And he finally says something. Andrew Palmer is his name. I found a lot of stunts for him.
Hmm.
And his very first job was in 1992, a movie, it looked like a horror movie, like low budget, called Run Like Hell. Then a lot of stunt credits. But the thing that I think I did look and see, he was in a bunch of other Star Trek stuff in character makeup. And he was in First Contact as a Borg stunt person, I think.
Oh,
so I bet they said,
they brought him over.
Who do we have? Yep. That we've spent the money on a Borg outfit.
Yeah.
Bring them into audition. They've only got one line.
Yep.
And I bet that's what happened.
And there was a stunt involved for him too, because he lunges at the Borg queen, gets hit by a force field and falls back.
That's true.
Into the alcove.
Yeah.
So
it makes
they
sense.
Someone. Yeah. That makes
they
sense.
They had a stunt guy from First Contact who had the costume built, and that's Andrew Palmer, played the errant drone. We also have Alien Man. Do you remember that there was, when the queen or somebody runs into somebody in the Unimatrix and he's like, where are you from? And he's like, I don't know where I'm from. It was like his first time there.
Oh no. They were asking him like, what ship are you on? Do you
what
know
ship
yet?
Are you
like,
on? Yes.
He goes like, I don't know yet. So they
I don't
had,
know.
The virus hadn't been,
that guy
released
that guy.
Yet. Yes. Okay.
That's Alien Man. And he was just, an ND alien guy. The actor's name is Clay Storseth.
Okay.
And he has this credit and one other.
Okay.
The only other credit he has, and I think this may have been his first, maybe one of his first jobs.
Yeah.
A Window That Opens. It was a short film, is the only other credit I could find for him. So Clay Storseth, this is his big moment.
It is.
In showbiz, I think.
Yeah.
But that's Clay. That's our additions.
Thank you for that. Shall we jump
right in? Let's jump in.
We start off with if you're watching on Netflix, there's a previously on,
which we never did.
No. Well, no, we've done it once before.
Very rare, though.
Every time we have we come back from a cliffhanger, we do have something on Star Trek Voyager.
But
right?
I found it to be really good. I found it to be exciting to have a previously on. I wish we had it every week, not just when we have a special cliffhanger episode.
Yeah, well, that'd be
why
nice.
Because that would help to keep that continuity. Anyway,
yes, I hear you. I hear you. So then we have the very first shot of the new part of the episode. The second part is the exterior space shot of the Borg tactical cube.
It's flying then, right at the camera.
Yeah, coming right at you.
Right at the camera. It was a cool shot. Super cool. Out of the gate, I was like, Mike Vahar, nice work.
Good job, Mike. Interior Borg cube. Very cool shot showing the different levels. The camera pans from like one
very
higher level.
Very cool shot.
Very
one of our
nice.
Best. Yeah. One of our best of.
I knew you would be impressed by that shot.
Very cool shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Dan Curry, the whole team.
Yes.
Great job there.
All of them.
Great job there.
All of them. We do pick up Tuvok, who's making his way to find B'Elanna Torres with the other members. And he does find Torres. But as they start speaking, we realize that they are drones, but they are now completely aware that they are drones. So they are not automatons. And Torres has this crazy like effect on her voice, right? So it's a subvocal processor that was installed for her, so now she sounds very robotic.
She's the only one, and they mention it. They say, now, by the way, let's just stop here for a minute, because I was like, all right, so they're on the ship. The first thought I had is, are they using the virus that they're gonna, you know, did they inject them with this virus or something? Because if you are assimilated, we have never had any technology to stop that. Like, this is a huge thing that we've been able to be assimilated and still know who we are. Like, that alone is a game changer that I think is really underplayed in this whole episode, even though it's, you know,
well,
they
were injected with something.
A nanovirus, we learned later, but I was like,
a neurosuppressant. Something. That's
a neural suppressant.
Yeah.
But why can't we do that every time we deal with the Borg? Like, now, if we have that,
we should be eating them like they're Tic Tacs. Like, everyone should have them. You just pop them in your mouth. Like,
this is huge deal.
Yes.
That
have you taken your daily neurosuppressant? Yeah. Like that, right?
You'll never be assimilated. We'll never. Now we can fight them much more fairly. But
yes.
Anyway, that seems to get sort of glossed past what a game changer that is. But we use it for this plot.
Good catch.
So anyway.
Good catch. I like that. So they're talking. Torres has this crazy. And you know what it sounds like? You know when you're a kid and the fan is on and you start talking in right in front of the fan to make that your voice sound funny? That's what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. It did sound like
same
that.
Same way. Yeah.
It did.
And Tuvok basically says, hey, let's go. We got to go find Janeway. We have to make it back to the central plexus, which I said last episode would be a great band name for us.
Yes. Okay. It sounds like a punk band. Central Plexus.
Central Plexus on stage now. Voyager Bridge. Chakotay says that they should have heard something by now. It's 17, 18 minutes now has gone by. And Voyager basically just keeps following the cube at a very safe distance.
On the bridge, the very first shot.
Yes.
Starts below the doctor's legs in a console and kind of comes up
again.
We've never done that shot. Yeah. Like Mike Vahar in season 7 found a shot we had never done,
which was
super cool. So Mike's on fire. That's
kudos
all I got
to Mike.
Yes.
He's in the groove.
But we do learn on the bridge that we're tracking their brain function, but we have not seen any sign of this virus deployed. And Chakotay calls Astrometrics. Seven says that the cube has been damaged, but it should be operational in a couple of hours, she tells Chakotay.
Yep.
And Chakotay orders Seven to go back into the Unimatrix Zero so that they will know as soon as this virus is deployed. So, and he says something like, go back with your friends and let them, you know, so we know when this thing, and she's like, they're not my friends.
Yeah.
Please call them acquaintances.
Yeah.
And I feel like this whole story with her love for Axum or whatever.
This is what
very
made this
confusing
the less, okay.
to me.
Robbie, this is, remember in the very beginning we talked about, you said you like this one better than the first one. I said, I'm the opposite because of this B storyline with her and Axum.
It doesn't work at all. I'll say it right now.
It's a storyline that hurts my brain. To watch this, and I'm just going, oh no! But
I think
that's
it could have worked. I think it could have worked, but I think it's a combination of just the way that
you know how it could have worked. This is how it could have worked if they were just friends, and they had not consummated. And in this meeting, they start to feel it even more and consummate it. You see what I'm saying? Like, this is the next.
I think the whole thing that blew it for me is in the last episode when she learned the truth. She was so angry at him. I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah. Like,
it would have been different if she never learned the truth.
Yeah.
And was like suspecting it. And then did have feelings. And then he said, you know why you're having feelings? Because it's in you somewhere. We have this love for each other. And I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to, you know, confuse you. But it's
her reaction really backed her into a corner that she couldn't get out of.
Yeah. I don't think we ever got out of that
previous
episode. I don't think we ever recovered from the way that they kind of went into the story. Anyway.
Correct. All right. So now we're back in Unimatrix Zero. Chakotay has basically ordered Seven to go back in there and let everyone know the 411. And is it Karak or is it Korak? Or is it?
I think it's Karak. That's his name. Yeah. Karak is Karak bossing around this Hirogen.
Well, no, he's prepping everybody. They're like,
he's prepping everybody.
There.
But he tells he's like ordering the Hirogen, and the Hirogen's like, okay.
Yeah,
I've never seen a Hirogen be that submissive, I gotta say.
Okay.
I've never seen anybody talk to a Hirogen and the Hirogen go, oh, yes, sir. Sure.
Well, maybe that Hirogen learned the lesson of teamwork. And there you go. And now they're reformed. They're gonna go along with the plan. Seven is looking for her acquaintance / old boyfriend. He's not there. So Karak's like, well, we haven't seen him, so maybe he's dead. I mean, Karak's very matter of fact. It's just like, he could be dead.
Yeah. He said he could be dead. And if he died, you know, in battle, then it would be an honorable one.
Yeah.
Honorable death. So, and then all of a sudden, while they're talking about this, you hear this like demon sound, but it's
a guy coming out of his regeneration. He's going into his regeneration cycle, right?
So it was the weirdest sound. I don't remember it from the previous episode. It was like,
okay. Oh,
it was like,
Was it the same sound? Okay.
It was weird. I don't remember it from before. I didn't like it.
Okay,
bad demon sound. This is where the alien appears.
Yeah.
By the way. So, he just pops in
Has the virus been deployed? And the guy's like, oh, I'm not sure. She goes, do you remember anything, your location, what ship you're on? He's like, no, nothing. So basically the virus has not been deployed. It's still undeployed.
Move on to the cube. We go back to the cube. There's Tuvok and B'Elanna. They're looking for this central plexus. They see a couple drones walk through kind of a force field in the hallway.
Yep.
And so they think they're heading towards maybe that'll be where they should go. So they go over and Tuvok sort of tests it. He like puts his hands.
Yeah, because he thinks he's not going to go through it because he's still thinking in his non-drone head, basically.
Yeah. 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 But his hand goes through. So they're like, cool, good. So they go in, they find a room that's leading them towards the central plexus. And there's a drone working on a console. And Tuvok's like, I'm going to take care of this. He goes over to Vulcan neck pinch the drone. And suddenly the drone turns around. It's Janeway.
It's Sharpay Janeway.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway, yes.
And she seems pretty normalish.
She's very normal. She's not very Borg at all. No. She's just Janeway with Borg makeup on. That's it. Like Janeway going to a Halloween party on the ship dressed as a Borg.
I think that it would have been good if Mike or the actors had discussed, maybe they did discuss it. Like when we first see them turned into Borg, you know, Roxanne's head turns and she sort of marches like a drone and Tuvok's marching like a drone and Janeway's head even turns the first time we see them, right? They're pretty drone-ish.
They are.
They never are after that. Like they don't
walk. Oh, yeah. They don't walk that way. Yeah, they walk now, like their normal selves.
They walk like their normal selves. Yeah. And I feel like even if they can walk like their normal selves, if they're around anyone else, at least until their cover's busted, they should still do their thing.
Put it on.
Yeah. They would.
I will say this, though. I do believe that since First Contact premiered that movie, those drones walked pretty robotish and slow, clunky.
Yes.
And now looking at the drones now, you know, they just look, even though they're slower than Janeway and everyone else, how they're walking, they're still faster than they were on First Contact. To me, it seems like their pacing.
Yeah, they're getting more human walk. Yeah,
exactly. So,
which I miss the old days.
I do, and I feel like they didn't really, you know, respect the canon of that movement being very robotic and stiff. So,
yes.
Okay, agreed. Let us move on.
All right. So there's Janeway, and she's trying to find the plexus. You know, doesn't want to draw any attention. Torres goes to some panel. She's like, there's an alternate route. It's about 30 meters away.
Yeah.
And as they're kind of figuring this out, we see Tuvok is sort of distracted and he hears like the collective voice in his head. And Janeway is like, you okay? And he says his neural suppressant must be wearing off or something. So this is, we start to see here that Tuvok is not hanging on as strong as Janeway and B'Elanna, which is interesting.
I didn't feel like that was the right choice, though. Writing wise, I would have written it different. I would have had Janeway succumb to it or B'Elanna succumb to it before Tuvok did, being as Vulcan as he is, and how you know meditative and strong his mind is. Yeah. He would, and he goes first like that, or maybe his neural suppressant that was injected by the doctor had a lower dose.
There's been rejecting. Maybe the Tuvok physiology is different. It's rejecting it in
maybe
some way.
Yeah, and it wasn't altered to the right chemical.
But he's starting to go. He's starting to go down.
He is.
We go back over to the Unicomplex, and we see that she, the Borg Queen, is hearing Tuvok.
Yeah.
And she says something like, I can't, Tuvok or something. She says something like,
and she goes, I heard him, the Vulcan, but
the
he's
Vulcan?
Gone. Yeah. Why? So she heard him and then she didn't hear him. She's like, why can't I hear the others? So now she's learning. They're somehow masked from her, but yet she's getting glimpses of Tuvok for a second and then he fades out again. All right.
And so now we go to Unimatrix Zero to the virtual reality.
The forest.
And we see some drones searching. There's Tom Morga, our stuntman.
Yeah, Tom. That's right.
Tom's walking around and he kind of puts his laser sights on some alien in the bushes. And so he follows that alien, hits a tripwire.
Yep.
And like a log comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a gate or something hits him in the head, knocks him onto a rock and he's dead.
Yeah.
And he fritzes out. I thought, well, that was easy. Like if we can kill Borg drones with logs.
Yes.
Like we don't need all our phaser rifles and, torpedo combos.
That's all we need.
Hit them with some log.
We just need some log.
Sometimes I think the Borg look pretty stupid. Like sometimes they look like the most evil, dangerous, unbeatable alien in Star Trek history. And sometimes they look like...
Is it Laurel and Hardy for you?
Laurel and Hardy.
Okay.
And that this was a Laurel and Hardy moment.
Good.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Axum has set up these traps. He talks about it.
After that happens, another trap sets. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
He talks about that trap worked. And then they hear another trap and they go over and in this
it's
net...
It's the old net... trap.
Yeah,
the one that pulls you up. Yeah,
in the net is Seven of Nine,
Annika Hudson.
And Axum tells the others, leave this one to me. This was a very flirty scene.
Most definitely. All the looks, the going back and forth, yes, I agree.
I was this is where I was confused in the storyline. This is the story. Everything else works for me in this episode. This story does not. Because I was like, wait a minute.
I agree. She was so angry
at him the last episode.
I agree. 1000%. She did a 180 with this guy completely.
In this scene.
It's a very, very flirty scene. She tells wait for the word on the virus and I should return to camp.
Yeah, and when he cuts her out of this net, she falls into his arms. Do you remember that? She like falls into his arms and they have this like, I was like, where did this come from?
I know, it's crazy.
She was just saying like, I wish you were dead last episode. Like, I don't understand.
We will only be friends. And that's how she was the last episode.
Yes, but she does say after she falls in his arms and has this moment, she's like, I'll go back with you, but no more talking. Like, I'm done.
Yep.
So he's like, okay.
That's
all right. But anyway, they go off. So we see there's going to be more there. And now we go back to the cube. Torres is working on this access door to the Nexus Plexus or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Tuvok's still like phasing out. He's like hearing things still.
Yes. He hears, where are you? He starts recalling his life, like where he was born, the time, the date, the place. He thinks that he can recite
details about his life. This will stop this, from happening.
Yeah. So he's talking to himself about all these facts about who he really is.
Yeah.
Janeway says, you got to stay focused. Torres does enter this plexus, the central plexus, punk band.
Yeah. Yeah. Tuvok does say, look, you need to deactivate me if it comes to that. He's trying to, he does let Janeway know in this scene that he has this.
He's like, I'm losing it.
Pulled out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to deactivate me, basically kill me.
Yeah.
But I love when she finds, you know, the way to get into this room and the door opens, this puff of smoke comes out. It's like, it was cool looking. I loved it. It was cool.
It was very theatrical.
Well, yes. It was good for the central plexus. It's
definitely
very rock and
the plexus
roll.
Needs a little,
needs smoke, a little rock and roll. Yeah.
A little rock and roll smoke machine. I'll go with that.
And they go inside. Tuvok hears the queen again. He looks into like a mirror. Like they have mirrors in there or something. It's like a funhouse mirror.
See, that's what most people don't know. Borg cubes always have like a funhouse component.
Have a funhouse.
It's like a little side thing that most people don't know about. But the next scene is the best scene here. This is the scene in the ready room. I want to hear your interpretation of this one. This is Paris and Chakotay.
All right. So this scene, the scene you're talking about.
This
back on Voyager. Chakotay's sitting there at Janeway's desk.
Yep.
Because he's in charge now.
He's number one.
Yeah. And Paris comes in.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is Chakotay doing? Like, is he checking his Instagram or what? I don't even know. He seemed very busy. Yeah. I was like, this is personal work that he's doing. I don't know. It just was.
He's really busy.
Very busy on the thing. But anyway, Tom's worried about the team. He says the plan was 2 hours. It's been over 2.5 now.
Yeah.
And Tom says, you know, with the team gone, that makes me acting first officer, Chakotay. And, you know, I thought I would give you my opinion as acting first officer that, I think you should pull them out before it's too late. This is getting dangerous.
Oh, my goodness.
Chakotay is like, well, I say we wait. And I forget the dialogue, but there's a bit of a like,
this is
old Tom and Chakotay stuff.
Yeah, like, I wrote, this is where Tom gives Chakotay some sass. Sassy Tom comes out.
Yeah, Tom's a little sassy. He's like,
there's a little bite to this Tom Paris in this scene, for sure.
And Chakotay barks
back. He bites
back.
He says, in normal situations, this could get you into a lot of trouble. But the way you have spoken to a captain, the way you've chosen to speak to me, so... and then Paris just bites right back. I learned from the best, saying that he learned the sass that he has
from
Chakotay. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So there you go. A little
but it's a nice.
Forth.
I like this.
This scene too. Yeah, I had a good time watching this.
Now we go back to the cube. Janeway says, "Download the virus." Pistora starts to do it. Mm-hmm. She uses her hand tubules.
I love that. I know.
She's downloading.
I wish I had those
from her body. I guess.
Yeah, her tubules.
I mean, this is the part, like, this is what I don't understand. If we were sent on this mission, she would have to have a piece of technology to download this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's not in her. It's not in her bloodstream.
No.
But now that she's Borg, suddenly she can just do it with tubules.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of, like, now that I'm deconstructing this more, maybe my rating will go down.
It's gonna
I don't know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is where Tuvok hears the queen again.
Yes. And he starts talking about his daughter's name.
Yeah.
And then do you hear what the city was where she was born?
No. Where was it?
He said T'Pol. Isn't T'Pol his wife or the character from Enterprise? Maybe. I'm like, huh? Why would that? His wife's.
That's the city
named. Yeah. He goes, and my, you know. It's weird.
That's strange. He's losing it. He doesn't remember.
Maybe that's what it is. He's losing it. He's saying that his wife's name and everything. Yeah, it's all messed up.
We cut to the bridge. Doc sees that Tuvok has a problem. And then Chakotay comes down to Tom and says, hey, if I decide to go a little closer, I assume my first officer would concur.
Yeah.
And Paris goes, yes, that's correct. So we see there on the, so that little bump in the previous scene, I feel like.
I felt you guys should have high-fived or fist bumped at that
hugged
point.
It out or something.
Or just, yeah, a little something.
Hugged it out.
Yeah.
I love you, Chakotay. Something like that.
Yeah,
okay,
I
so
like that.
We cut to space. We see Voyager hit warp. They are going in closer. So
yes.
We know that happened. Go to the plexus. They put the virus into the plexus. And then they're getting ready to leave. Our away team's getting ready to leave to contact Voyager, let them know it's done. Yeah. And Tuvok blocks them.
Yeah, but Tuvok, he did say, you know, Captain, you must deactivate me. He was holding on for the very last little grasp of sanity. And then she tries to move towards her. Remember that? And she gets knocked back by a personal force field thing that Tuvok shoots out there. And that's when he says, my designation is 3 of 12. So he becomes Borg, full Borg now.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he blocks the queen. I called Janeway the queen. And then he blocks Janeway.
He blocks Janeway.
Oh, doesn't he knock down Torres? He knocks Torres down.
He knocks her down.
He hits her hard. I was thinking, Tom's lady is just getting it from Tuvok right now.
But now the queen knows where all three of the away team are, and drones appear. Tuvok's gone to the dark side. Some drones appear to help him, and we're on a chase. We basically start a bit of a chase here.
Yeah.
And we go to the bridge. We're 40 kilometers within range of
40,000 kilometers.
40, sorry, 40,000. 40K, I wrote down. Yeah. That's K is short for kilometers. 40,000 kilometers within range of this cube. Harry says there's still too much shielding around the plexus. He can't get a lock on them. So we've gone in close, but we can't pull them out still.
Yeah.
We go back to the cube. This is where Tuvok knocks out Torres right here. Janeway attempts to run, but he grabs her. And this is where I wrote down, like, Tuvok isn't... Tuvok grabs her. He's full Borg now. But her movement is not robotic at all. Like, if she's trying to keep any cover,
she's gone.
Yeah, she's Janeway.
She's totally Janeway.
She's Janeway
at the Halloween party, dressed as a Borg. That's it.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Back on the bridge, Chakotay's like, target their shield generators. And at this point, something happens. There's like a Borg torpedo we see coming, which is a cool shot. It's coming right at us, right?
Yeah, the queen has seen Voyager approach just before this. We go to the bridge. Chakotay is going to shoot at him, but Paris says, Commander. Then we go to a screenshot, and we see this like torpedo coming at us.
Yeah.
But I know for dramatic reasons, it's like, Commander, cut to the screen, it's coming. Oh, no. But those torpedoes would be there in like a second. Like,
yeah, that was a really slow torpedo. Slow. You know what
it
that
was
is?
The slowest torpedo I've ever seen
I'll
in my
tell
life.
You, that's called the Borg shame you torpedo, where it's going so slowly that you feel so much shame from being hit by it. Like, you should have evaded that. There should have been evasive maneuvers, and there weren't evasive maneuvers in that scene. But it's a
big hit.
What happens, though, is like someone has basically accessed our tactical control.
Oh, yeah. So
our shields were down.
Has somehow tapped into our systems. Our shields are down.
Well, you know what we learned later? It's because the queen is now in cahoots with Tuvok's brain. So she gets all the evasive, she gets all the codes and everything from Tuvok's consciousness, basically. So that's how she knows.
Cheater. She's a cheater.
She's a cheater.
We get a big hit, though. The doctor says sensors are down. He's lost the away team. Harry says hull breaches. Oh, yeah. Deck 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
Chakotay's another big hit.
Reverse course. Paris is, we can't just leave them. Like, you're very
because he loves his lady.
He loves his lady who just
the Balana.
Backhanded by Tuvok. She needs some help. But no, she can handle her own.
We go back to the queen, and she says she thanks Tuvok for the help, you said, all the information. Yeah. She starts walking away, and then she turns suddenly, and she's like, I'm losing voices.
Yeah, I love the scene.
And she's in this push in on her face. She starts listing the voices.
Yeah.
You know, the drones that she can't hear anymore.
Right.
So we realize that the virus is starting to take effect on all from the central plexus.
Yeah,
hundreds,
it's
she
been
says,
spread out.
Thousands in the entire, now. Yes. She's losing thousands of voices. Yeah. She turns to somebody in the room and she realizes even one of the Borg drones in the room.
In the same room with her, she can't hear
his thoughts.
She
can't hear him. So she walks, walks over to that guy. And she basically interrogates him, talks to him. And I thought here, like, if she's really testing him, why isn't she first at least trying to telepathy or whatever, you know, through the collective talk and then start talking?
Yeah.
But she went right to words.
She did.
He's not responding. He's not responding.
Well, he's like, I'm not alone. You can't stop us all. Because that's after he tries to lunge at her to attack her. But that force field knocked him back.
I felt like that line, by the way, was looped. And I don't know if the actor looped it or if Loop Group looped it. Or I don't know.
You think someone...
It was not a great loop job of his. We're not alone. You can't stop us all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not a great loop number.
Yeah.
But they get him. So he's got the virus in him. We go to space. The cube's flying by.
Yeah.
We go back inside. Janeway is in an alcove. She's walked in, thrown into this Borg alcove with a force field around her. She's stuck in there.
Yeah.
Then we cut back outside and we see the cube entering this Unicomplex, that cool space station that I thought was super cool.
Yeah, it is cool. But then isn't there the scene where she makes Janeway's image look non-Borg like? It goes back to Starfleet. Do you remember that? What was the purpose of that? I don't understand that.
Why, like, she didn't just go talk to her normally?
Yeah, the Queen goes, I altered the transmission to restore your original appearance. I know how vain humans can be. That's the line from the Queen to Janeway.
Yeah, that's the explanation of why she's going to talk to... So that we... I think part of it was they didn't want to put Kate in the Borg makeup so much.
While she was speaking those lines. Ah.
So they had her as a Borg in the other room being transmitted holographically as Janeway's normal look.
Yeah.
But it means that Kate had to shoot all those lines when she was in the Borg alcove in the Borg makeup. Mm-hmm. And she had to shoot those lines on some kind of green screen or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the other stuff. So.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But at least it looked like Starfleet Janeway versus Borg Queen as opposed to
Borg Janeway Queen versus Borg Janeway.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a better visual, I think.
Understood. Okay.
They start having this conversation. The Queen says, look at this dead drone right here.
Yeah.
You killed him. Blames it on Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
And she also tells Janeway that she knows everything about Unimatrix Zero and the virus and what you're trying to do. So she must have learned all of this from Tuvok again.
Right.
And she says, you know, I can't fix the virus right now. I need an antidote. I got to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And if your doctor created this virus, he can find a cure. So if you don't agree to help me, I'll just assimilate Voyager and I'll have your doctor. And I did love that intercutting. We do cut back to Borg Janeway kind of saying some of this stuff. Janeway says no. And so the Queen pulls up an image on a monitor of Spatial Grid 94, Cube 60. And she says, see that cube? I can't hear three drones in that cube.
Yeah.
And she initiates self-destruct. She kills them all.
How many were in that cube again?
I forget how many, but in the first one, she pulls up another one. She says there's 11,000 drones on this one.
That's a
sphere. And there's only one.
That's the sphere.
The sphere, sorry. Yeah. 11,000 drones.
64,000 drones on the cube.
On the first one.
64,000. Three she could not hear. So, 60,
so she killed them all.
Well, 63,997.
Seven.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It's
She's
bad.
Tough.
It's a bad day.
The sphere comes up. 11,000 drones on the sphere. She says there's only one who's silent. And she destroys that. She is.
Yeah.
Cold-hearted. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, Janeway, this is all your fault. All these drones are dying. These innocent drones are dying. And this is your fault and for freeing those few drones. Mm-hmm. And she says, I will destroy all the cubes that have any infected drones. What are you willing to sacrifice, Janeway? Millions? She's like, hundreds, thousands, millions?
Janeway's going to need therapy after all the head messing that,
oh my God.
The Queen is really messing with Janeway's head.
Yeah. Yeah. So she basically gives Janeway an ultimatum. She says, you tell these individuated Borg
to drums, rejoin our collective.
To rejoin
immediately,
us.
And I will spare them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to kill millions of drones.
Yeah.
And then Janeway says something like, well, they have a choice now. It's up to them. And Queen's like, you're using them.
Yeah.
And, but Janeway does not relent. And she tells the Borg Queen, she decides that the Borg Queen should go to Unimatrix Zero. You should see this. Maybe you'll be convinced. You know, she's trying to appeal to her individuality, I guess.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, if you just have a taste of individuality, then maybe you won't want to destroy the entire collective.
Yeah, because that's what's going to happen. Because if there's one voice out of any cube or sphere, it's completely destroyed. So the entire collective would be destroyed.
Yeah.
If she went through with that. Yes.
Yeah. So then we go to the bridge really quickly. And I love the choreography here. It was like a handheld shot on the bridge.
Yeah,
Seven comes in. Mm-hmm. Harry's repairing things. Paris has a line or something. And it's all kind of one shot. Seven comes in. She reports that the drones in Unimatrix Zero can now remember. So we know the virus is working. And Chakotay says, you've got to go back and see if any drones are aboard Tactical Cube 138, maybe they could help us.
Right.
So go find those, you know, the freed drones in the virtual place, see if they can help Janeway and our team.
Mm-hmm.
So she rushes back to go into her virtual place.
But
and
not before. Yes, the doctor, exactly.
Doctor's got to make some modifications to her alcove.
Yeah.
And so they have a long scene here. They talk about her double life, her, you know, being one person here and another person there.
Yeah, but the focus of this scene was her relationship with Axum. This is what the doctor is talking to her about, pretty much.
He's talking to her about that, but he's also playing a lot of subtext of his own sadness of
most definitely. But again, that B storyline of Axum and Seven is what ruined this episode for me, or at least what made me feel like this episode is not as good as the first part because of that B storyline. And now we have a scene where they're talking about that B storyline. And yes, the doctor is dealing with his own stuff too. Yeah, I do see that.
And the doctor's advice to me was very human. It was really good advice and good thoughts. Yeah. But I felt like I wish they'd written his therapy scene here, being a counselor, more like, hey, I'm a robot and you're a robot and let's talk about robots' experiences. Mm-hmm. But he was really talking as if he were human. And I found that to be a little strange.
It pulled you out, didn't it?
Yeah. I wish it was more robot talk.
Yeah.
You know, well, as a robot, I wanted to feel things too. You know,
there's been a couple of times where the doctor's had lines or been in scenes where he comes off very human-like and you're like, no, that's not the program happening right there. So
I don't think it is. I think he should have been the same curious, naive robot that she is in this situation. He might have a little more time under his belt.
Do you think there was some jealousy from the doctor?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So there was that feelings of like, you know, it should be me.
He was jealous. He shouldn't about Axum.
Should he be experiencing that as a program, jealousy like that?
I think he can, but I think it would be confusing to him because he does say, well, that Axum, he's a very lucky man.
And that's what every guy that loses out in the game of love says about the other guy.
You're basically saying, I think you're awesome. And I wish you were
with
person.
Me. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a strange scene. If that romance storyline had been deeper, if we had been more invested in it or not so confused by it, then I think this scene would have made more sense to me. But I felt like
Harry could have been in this scene with Seven.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense.
But there's almost more emotion in this scene than there is with Axum, the guy that she's supposed to
be. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. I agree. I agree. Okay.
Okay. We go back to Unimatrix. They're having a big meeting. Axum's telling them that they need to strike at the Unicomplex and disrupt the collective's communication so they can regroup outside of here.
Mm-hmm.
And Seven says, well, you need to help the away team too. Janeway, Torres, and Tuvok. They risked their lives for you guys. Mm-hmm. And Korok at first doesn't care about that.
He's there's like, no time for it. Yeah. It's
and then Axum argues, this is, you know, they helped us. This is a matter of honor, you know. I thought honor meant something to you. So then Korok's like, okay,
yeah,
all right, I'll help them. So he goes out to find if there's any drones in the virtual world that might also be in that cube where our team is. So they are starting to, maybe they can help. We'll see. Seven approaches Axum though. They talk about how he's on the other side of the galaxy, basically.
Yeah, he's in a scout ship in the Beta Quadrant.
Yeah, he is like so he's not even he's no nowhere near in real life they would never meet.
No.
She's super vulnerable with him in this scene.
Yes.
You know, they talk about meeting in real life. Again, this is where I'm just like, how did we get so from there to here? It doesn't connect for me.
It's like it's like a whole nother genre of television here. Here's the soap opera right here.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
And she says something like they won't be able to meet at the Farathum Gorge. And she says, oh, it was at the top of our list. So she's remembering some of this stuff. The Farathum
Gorge.
It's
all coming back all of a sudden. Yes. Right? She knows it all now.
And he says, well, maybe we can put fluidic space at the top of our list now. So they're kind of, they're working it out.
Yeah, there's a little something happening.
Axum asks if they never can meet anywhere, is this good enough for her? Like, will this be enough? And she takes his hand and she kisses him. And I think this is Seven's first real kiss, like real kiss on the show. Has she kissed? I'm trying to think.
Well,
in the Hirogen, in the, I don't know. When
she kissed me and then she turned into an alien though. So I did.
But was it a long? I mean, was it a kiss? Kiss? This was like
it was a kiss. Kiss.
Uh-huh. I don't remember. Oh, okay, all right.
We reviewed this earlier.
I don't remember.
On our but podcast, it was a long,
I remember you. She kissed. I mean, this is the first time where it's like not a twist. There's no twist. This is a full on romance kiss.
Yeah. Okay.
She's had any.
I'll go with that.
Legitimate.
Did she kiss the doctor?
I think there might have been a peck or something, but I think when she was the lounge singer, didn't like the Hirogen guy, the Nazis or somebody try to kiss her or something?
What?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm just saying this is the first.
Okay, I'll go with that.
There's no spin on it. Yeah. She's into it. He's into it. This is real romance. This is the first time that I can think of where Seven has had that sort of experience.
Huh.
Which I think is kind of important ultimately when in the very last scene when she talks with the captain.
Yeah,
I think it is important that she feels something that has never happened to her before.
Okay.
But anyway, big kiss moment.
We're back in Unimatrix.
Unimatrix in the
Zero,
jungle part.
Back in the forest, yeah.
In the forest, kids are running around and one kid's crawling around on the ground and crawls over.
Right
to the feet of the queen. Oh, she's the queen there. Herself.
Yes.
And he goes, you're one of the machine people trying to hurt us.
Yeah.
I love that. The machine people.
Yeah.
And he tries to say the word assimilate. And he's like, a civil. She's like, assimilate. And she says, assimilation is like friends. It's like being friends.
Can you play that boy grown up just doing those lines? Yeah. Just like you just did just now.
Yeah. She says, it's like being friends. And let's just be friends. And you know, it's good to be in a collective and be friends because it's fun, she says. Which made me laugh.
It was because the way she said it was so Borg, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's sort of like Seven's line from Child's Play. Was it Child's Play? When she says, fun would now commence. Do you remember that line? This was the Borg Queen version
Borg's version.
Fun would now commence. Yeah.
I
have other note before you go on. One last note. Alien boy, did you notice his makeup?
No. Oh, he had a little.
But here's the thing. I was like, God, that looks familiar. And the more I looked at it, I realized he is the same race of the aliens from the episode Muse, where B'Elanna Torres and Harry Kim crash land on that planet. Mm-hmm. And they're doing the Greek tragedy play and everything like that. All those aliens have what I called, my video reaction for that episode, one of my video reactions, I called them the Venus flytrap aliens because that's what it looks like. It's like a little, you know, it's almost like that
was
shape
the same alien. He was a kid of them.
This doesn't make any sense because they're a pre-warp society. They were in feudal times. They were like swords and arrows and stuff. So you see what I'm saying? So
but
that
if
was
there
like,
was them, The Borg could have taken some of them.
But I think he talked about our there. Ship was shaking when they came at us. Like when we first hear this boy talk in the first episode and the way he's dressed, it's very advanced and modern and a post-warp society. You see what I'm saying?
You and B'Elanna left behind some important info and now they're flying spaceships.
Oh, hey, maybe they did sort of reverse engineer a lot of things that we left behind and they'd be
maybe.
Okay, let's buy that. Let's go with that one. Let's move on.
But she also says in the scene to him that she was assimilated when she was a kid. Do you think she was lying? I don't know. It was pretty legit sounding.
I bought it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I bought it at first, but then when she says, do you miss I miss my parents. Or she says, you know, my parents are with me now because the collective, do you miss your parents? Then I thought maybe she said that just to set him up. I don't know if she was really assimilated when she was a kid.
You've been watching too much television, Rob and Duncan McNeil.
I don't believe it. I think it was all part of the con.
It was con.
She's lying. She's lying to a child.
I'm going to believe it.
Okay.
I'm going to choose to believe it.
She says, my parents are here right now. Could I see my parents? And then she says, sure. And then she says, show me more of this place.
Yeah.
And so he says, yeah, there's a great place where you can see everything from a cliff or something.
Yeah.
So they walk over to this, you know, shot of a lookout. And all I could think of was they're staring at a green screen and the light bouncing off the green screen is all over their costumes and faces. It just did not look like a great green screen to me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Did not.
All right.
But
I'm okay with it, but all right.
But it was a pretty view. A fake view. Yeah.
It's a fake pretty view, but you know, it's the thought that counts.
But it was
right
pretty
here.
We go back to the cube and holographic Janeway's there, the Queen's there. Queen says that
you're not in the cube, you're in the Unicomplex now.
The Unicomplex, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we're Janeway's on the cube. So that's why she's Holla Janeway in the Queen's little thing. So
in the Queen's lair.
Yeah.
But she's talking in the Unicomplex to holographic Janeway, and she says that place is primitive. She pulls up like a scan of some kind of, you know, medical scan or something. It looks like DNA or something.
Yeah.
And she says, you recognize this? And Janeway's like, no. And she goes, well, you should, because we've mutated your virus and we've mutated it to kill all the drones that are connected to Unimatrix Zero.
Yeah.
And unless you convince them to return to the collective, I'm going to release our mutated virus and it's going to kill them all. So what do you want to do?
And Janeway's like, you know what? That's great, but you can't deliver it. You can do whatever you want with that nanovirus, but you can't deliver because they've all been severed from the collective already. So too bad. Ha ha. And that's when the Queen says, oh yeah, I can also get to them in one other way. I can release this mutated nanovirus by going to Unimatrix Zero myself and releasing it there. And that will end them. And so Janeway's like, So the Queen basically says, I'll spare their lives, but you got to convince them to come back.
This is your choice.
That's it.
This is your choice.
Another the ultimatum is further reinforced in this scene.
She is cold. Cold. We go back to the bridge. The warp core is back online. Neelix is there.
Yes. We don't see Neelix on the bridge in the middle of action that often.
Never. I just think they want to put him in here
sandwiches and all kinds of things on the bridge, but he doesn't do this, right?
Well, I feel like in the last episode, he was in one scene but didn't say anything, like the ready room scene, a briefing room scene or something.
Wow.
So they haven't had much for Neelix in a couple of episodes. It was nice to see him up there.
It is.
He says, we've got sensors back online. Mm-hmm. Harry says, someone has tapped into our holographic systems. It's the Borg. And then the doctor calls and says, someone's here to see you, Commander. You might want to come on down. Mm-hmm. We go to sick bay. Chakotay enters and it's Holla Janeway in sick bay. And she says, you know, they've proposed this compromise. They're going to release this mutated virus that will kill all the drones. And we also intercut with the Borg Janeway. So we know that the Borg Janeway is back on the cube or wherever. And she's being projected as herself there.
Mm-hmm.
And she says Unimatrix Zero can no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's an order.
Yeah. Have I? And then she repeat, have I made myself clear, Commander?
Yes. Have I made myself clear?
Is what she says.
Yeah. And he agrees. And then she disappears. And Seven and the Doctor are like,
what was
are you
that?
Doing?
Yeah. What they didn't know what the heck's going on. Yeah.
It's like she's issued this, you know, kill order. How can we do this?
Right.
And
but here's Chakotay a great JC says, moment.
Yeah.
Chakotay says, didn't you hear? Unimatrix Zero can no longer exist. So JC we know has this connection. He understands her where everyone else doesn't. So
yes. There you go. We go back to the bridge and Tom is in the captain's chair.
I know. That was
first
nice.
Time. I think that's the
no,
first.
No, that's not the first time. You've been I there before. Like it... No, you have.
Really?
Yes, you have. I promise. Okay. At least one episode.
Well,
we're in season 7 now, Robbie. You don't think you've manned the bridge once in
I don't think I have ever.
All right,
been
I'm gonna find a scene. Okay. And
I don't think so. I think this is the first
you're gonna owe me a Pepsi or a Coke if I'm right. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Tom's in the chair though. We do see a Borg sphere approaching.
We're
nervous, and then we cut over
maneuvers,
and it's
battle stations, is what Paris says.
But it's Korok.
It's Korok.
It's Korok.
Is it Korok or Korok?
Korok. How are we? Korok. I don't know. He's
Can we just call him K to the O to the R to the O to the K? No, I'm sorry. We're not going to do that. It's just Korok. No,
that sounds much harder. it's Korok. But he's a man of his word. He said he would help. He's back in his Borg look.
He's taken command of that entire sphere. So look at that. He says, we've come to join you in battle, which is a really very satisfying moment to have an ally for the USS.
We
Voyager.
Don't know what the plan is yet.
No,
because
there's
all
no
we
plan.
Know is,
we just got some guy that's going to be there with us. So.
Chakotay knows, but he's not telling anybody yet because he only speaks
in
romantically with Janeway.
Yes.
But we go to the bridge. Chakotay's back. He calls Seven in Astrometric, says, we're almost there. Yeah. Have you isolated the frequency? She says, yes, almost. Chakotay says, get Korok. We go to his sphere.
Yeah.
He receives this interlink frequency. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay tells Korok, wait for my signal. We go back to Unimatrix Zero.
Yeah.
And Axum is there and he's telling people, like, you got to get out of here. We can't be here when this happens and we're going to have to make a sacrifice.
Yeah.
So all this is happening fast. We go back to the bridge. Chakotay says, it's time, Korok. We cut outside of his sphere, Korok's sphere, and it's powering weapons. We cut over to Voyager. Voyager's powering its weapons too. Mm-hmm. Or it's like it's our array dish, I guess. Because what we're sending out is this...
The deflector array, right?
The deflector array, yeah. They're powering up on both the sphere and Voyager. Yeah. We go back to the Unimatrix. Axum sending the last ones off this virtual world. It's starting to sort of...
What we're doing is... Aren't we sending out... Yeah, we're aren't we sending shooting out something to disrupt the frequency that Unimatrix Zero exists on,
yes.
right? We're trying to do that to eliminate it. Exactly.
Yes, yes. We're basically destroying this virtual world... So that she can't kill everybody.
Correct.
And it'll preserve these individuated Borgs, right?
Yep.
Back to the cube.
Yep.
And we're back to, I guess it's the
Queen's Chamber. Yeah, Unicomplex. The Queen actually notices something's happening, right? That's when she's like, you know, what are they doing? And Janeway's like, well, you wanted to destroy Unimatrix Zero. Mm-hmm. We're just lending you a hand. So there we have it, you know?
Yep. Yeah, she doesn't compromise. She doesn't make a deal with her. They're going to destroy the virtual world so that the queen can't infect everyone with their
and the queen's like,
mutation.
Yeah, because the queen's like, get me the virus because she's ready to infect everybody. She's going to go in there. And Janeway's like, well, you're too late. There's no one left to infect. Everyone's gone already. So,
yeah. And the queen even tries to grab her, Janeway, but she's a hologram.
Is that in this scene? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, she does that little, I'm going to show you. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Who's boss?
It's a hologram queen.
Yeah.
We go out to space. There's a space flyby. We're firing at the cube.
Yeah.
And here this is where I'm confused because the Unicomplex and the Queen's Lair, all of a sudden we're firing at the cube where Janeway was. So I guess Janeway's still on the cube?
She is still on the cube. Correct.
Where's the queen?
the queen is on the unit complex. She's always been in the unit complex. She's never been in the cube. Because when she's talking with Janeway, she's talking with the hollow image of Janeway.
So they dropped off the queen to hang out in her castle, and then the cube took off again? Just seems weird that the cube was at... I thought the cube came into the unit complex, and we never saw it leave, and then suddenly here, it's out on its own again. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I don't think we saw that.
No, because in the first episode, we wanted to spread the virus by getting to the central plexus of a Borg vessel. And then they were like, okay, what's the closest Borg vessel? And they looked and they said, oh, there's one that's pretty close, but it's a Borg tactical vessel. And the doctor's like, well, or so everyone's like, well, you could have picked a different target. Well, that's the best target we can pick. So what I'm saying is when the way team went over, they got infected and assimilated in that tactical vessel that's out.
Here's my confusion. There was one shot where the cube was flying through space by itself.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, there was a shot of the unit complex.
Yeah.
And I did see a cube flying
by, like it looked like
I thought it was the same cube.
Oh, yeah. No.
It never was. See, that's confusing to me. Okay. Well, now this all
does
makes
that change
sense.
Your rating too? Now?
Yeah. It goes back up. No.
Okay. Fine.
I don't know.
All right.
They fired the cube. Okay, we're back with the tactical cube where Janeway really is.
Yes.
They fired this cube, and then we go back to the queen's lair, and the hologram is starting to fritz.
Karak is also joining in on this battle now.
Yes, Karak is there. Voyager's firing. Karak is firing.
Yeah.
Inside the cube, we see that B'Elanna is freed from her, however she was detained, and she pulls up a monitor and sees Voyager's outside. And we go into astrometrics during this battle. Seven runs out of astrometrics, back to the bridge. Neelix is still there. Yay, Neelix, Team Neelix. Neelix says, we have picked up the away team. So he's scanning, finds the away team.
Yeah.
Harry tries to lock onto their biosignatures, but he still can't penetrate their shields.
The inner shields.
Yeah, the inner shields, exactly. So Chakotay calls Korok. And Karak says, I'm trying to help you with the shield thing. Yeah. I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. We go to cargo bay. Seven runs into her alcove.
Yeah.
She starts to go into her virtual world. Mm-hmm. And there she is on the Unimatrix. But this time it's destabilizing. It's like fritzes everywhere. Yeah.
But there's only one person left. It's Axum. So she finds him and they have this huge conversation. And once again, it's the soap opera again.
The soap opera. She's like, I feel like, you know, we wasted our time together. We could have been so much more.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, it gave us a chance to be together again, and I will find you. I will find you.
Yeah.
And then he disappears.
Nice scene, but why is it there? You know, soapy. That's the whole thing. Go ahead.
Soapy. Well, I think you've got to wrap this up for her to have. You've got to wrap this up for her to have the mindset she has at the very end.
Of course. Agreed. It has to leave somewhere. But he does say to her, Axum does say, I'll find you. I'll find you. He says it twice. He goes, I'll find you. And then I'll find you again. And they fritz out. They come back into, they wake up from the regeneration process.
We go back to the cube. So after I'll find you in tears and heartbreak, we go back to the cube and B'Elanna is kicking butt. She takes out this drone She looked good.
Yeah.
Roxanne did great. She destabilizes the shields. So the thing that we've been trying to, you know, get through to lock onto their biosignatures.
Yeah.
Now she's helping us from the inside.
Shields are down. Chakotay says energize. And we don't know because right when he says energize, you see the cube just explode. Everything is just blowing up.
And the space shot when the cube is blowing up, we don't know if they got him or not. When the cube is blowing up, the space shot, I love the shockwave pushing Voyager.
Yes. And the sphere. Voyager and the sphere got pushed forward from the shockwave. Exactly.
That was pretty cool. We go in the transporter room. Yay. Yeah. Team is saved.
Yeah.
But they're still bored. But
imagine how, I mean, I guess we kind of glossed over this, but that it exploded because the queen was the one who initiated self-destruct on that cube. She was like, okay, this is my final ace in the hole. That's how it blows up. Right. So it wasn't really because
the shots
of
that we fired.
Yeah, no. Got to make that clear. So
All right.
She's cold, but you know, our heroes are saved. They're beamed
up. Team is saved. They're getting helped. They're, you know, down on the ground. They're all weak and
Yeah, you know. There's a phalanx of medical personnel in their teal green uniforms rushing towards them to help them.
Then we go to flyby. We see Voyager and the Sphere flying together, but then they sort of part ways. They take off in their own directions.
Yep.
We hear a doctor's log, medical log, where he says it's been 48 hours since they came back.
Mm-hmm.
Over this log, we see him scanning Tuvok. He says B'Elan and the captain are on the mend, but Tuvok needs more time.
Mm-hmm.
And here I thought, all right, so Tuvok was the one who was the weaker one of this away team. But I thought Vulcans had this super strong physiology. But I guess my takeaway is ladies have a little something extra. Because the ladies were the ones that handled this. Even Vulcans are not quite as tough as the ladies. So
hats off to
B'Elan.
All the ladies in the house say, woot, woot.
Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
And by the way, the other thing it could have been, the reason that Janeway is so strong and resilient, you see her drinking coffee in sickbay. It could be the coffee. She's drinking it. I don't know. I'm not going to say that coffee is a miracle drug, but I'm not going to not say it. I love coffee.
I know you love coffee. And it's so interesting because both you and Rebecca drink coffee, correct?
Yes, we do.
And both
different
Megan
kinds.
And I drink tea and that's it. We do not drink coffee. We're
oh,
both
wow.
Of us. Yes.
Interesting.
I know.
Very interesting.
Yes. Like you can't imagine your life without coffee, right?
No, and I cannot.
But I am violently ill when I drink coffee. Like my stomach starts churning. Like
really?
It's like someone poisoned me. Like I'm sitting there going, oh God. And then my heartbeat is racing really. So my heartbeat races fast. My stomach is churning and turning and twisting and knots at the same time. It's the
Don't
worst.
Do that.
Oh no, man.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I can't do it. So
no coffee.
It
Janeway
smells great.
Loves her coffee.
She sure does. She sure does.
And that's why she was okay with this Borg situation. And you know, I think Tuvok drinks tea as well.
Yes.
So I'm just gonna say.
Yes.
If you want to battle the Borg,
you better be a coffee drinker.
You better like coffee.
You better like coffee. And I am envious of whenever, you know, you talk about coffee with such relish that I am envious of you. I'm like, God, I wish I could process that. If my body could take it, I would drink it. I would be on your team. I'd be team coffee.
Team coffee.
But my body is like, no bueno. So I have to back off, unfortunately.
Tea's probably better for you. Anyway.
Yeah. Final scene. So final scene
in
sickbay.
She's drinking coffee. Seven comes in.
Yeah.
Says Karak finished repairs and he's contacted all the former drones. Mm-hmm. And when Janeway sits up, she makes this sort of ooh, ah sound. And it was looped. And I was like, that's a classic Janeway. Oh, ah. It's like, there's something.
Janeway has pain, it comes out almost.
With like guttural sounds. It doesn't sound like pain.
Yeah,
it's weird.
I agree.
Kate can do that. But she does have that as she sits up in the scene and it was looped. So I wonder what she did. When she was filming the scene that they felt the need to
loop
just the ooh-ah. It was looped.
I don't think she remembered what she did.
No.
She just showed up and just did that.
Anyway, after the ooh-ah, she sits up, they talk, and basically Janeway's like, the resistance is alive and kicking, and she says the collective may never be the same.
The writers put in this one line, right, from Janeway, and she says, if I ever imply it's been easy on you these last few years, talking to Seven, remind me about today. Seven says, noted. And then the end of it is when Seven says, if I ever imply that he was nothing more than a friend, talking about Axum, remind me about today. So the writers employed this sort of
reciprocal line. I feel like this scene pulls the whole two-parter together for me.
So this was what made you rate this episode better than the original one, than the first one. Okay.
Because I feel like Seven, even though I don't like her story, it was a story where she went through experiencing on some level some real human emotions
she
in a way that she never...
Yeah.
Huge progress, and that was hard. That being human and feeling... you know, grief and sadness and love and all of that is hard. That human experience is hard. And Janeway felt like the Borg experience is hard. Yeah. That is a hard world to, you know, exist in. And so, they both reminding each other, like, I see you. I get yeah. you. This yeah. life, you know, okay. I didn't get right. it until I had this experience. By the way, yes. at the very end, the credits come up and it says Rick Berman and Ken Biller. This was Ken's first show running.
Oh, Ken that's right.
took over this
he
year.
Took over so. The whole daggum thing, didn't he?
And he went from like story editor, I think the first season.
All the way to executive
He went
producer.
From the very bottom to the very top to in terms of writer, yeah, seniority.
That's how Star Trek works.
Yeah.
And Hollywood works.
Yeah, sometimes it does. And this, yes. this was a good, mm-hmm. very good run for Ken Biller for sure.
Most definitely.
My lesson is in this last scene. My lesson is sometimes you just have to walk in another person's shoes to feel their true experience. And that last scene to me brought it all together in a good way. So yeah, that's my lesson. What about you?
I concur with you 1000%.
Yeah. Nice.
That's yeah, why that... programs like Wife Swap are so engaging and people learn from them is because they, you know, the moms go to another family and they live the life of a family that is basically the opposite. So you've got the one neat and tidy family and the one messy family, and the parents swap over like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to learn.
Yeah, same idea.
From
same
that.
Idea.
Yeah. Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My rating, mm-hmm. I can't remember what I gave the last one. I feel like it was 7 point something. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to give this an 8.2. This was a good episode for me. I feel like I liked it slightly better than the last one, but I don't remember my rating on the last one.
Okay.
But this one is an 8.2 for me. It was pretty good.
And I drop from my 8 something. I think I was 8.3 for the other one. Uh-huh. And then now I drop down to 7. No, I'll go 6.8. I'm going to go pretty low.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I'm going to drop a little.
Wow. Low. Look at like you.
That Axum storyline, just no. No. And I'm not trying to be like Harry should have been the guy for 7, and I'm going to downplay this episode because Harry didn't get that what he should have had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say 6.9.
Okay. Right there.
Okay, what is it?
The Captain and Admiral average rating for Unimatrix Zero Part 2 is 7.4. You were pretty close. I was higher. Yeah, I enjoyed this one. This was fun. I think Mike Vahar did an awesome job.
Yes, he did. He did. Yeah. If I'm going to rate off of Mike Vahar's directing, I'm going to go 9.6. So I'll jump
He did an awesome job.
He did a really good job.
Well, good. There you go. Season 7 has begun.
Oh my gosh. We are in the home stretch right now. This is crazy. Thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Unimatrix Zero Part 2, which is the season opener. Season 7. We're in the final season. Voyager, how exciting. Yeah. Join us next week when we talk about the second episode of season 7, which is Imperfection. Imperfection.
Okay.
Sounds like a Borg episode again.
Yeah. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of Borg stuff this season.
I think so.
We'll see.
See you then.